so I think it...
It's working.
Okay. House Committee on Revenue for Tuesday, March 10th, 2009 will come to order. Today, we have before us a number of bills with a similar general theme, and so we will open a public hearing on H.J.R. 14, H.J.R. 20, House Bill 2697, House Bill 2696, House Bill 2698, House Bill 2711, House Bill 2712, House Bill 2807.
Good morning, Mr. Chris. Chair, members of the committee. Just very briefly, just a topic sentence for each of the bills. H.J.R. 14 and 20 are refer constitutional amendments for the vote of the people. 14 pertains to putting a 10-year limit on tax on all tax expenditures. H.J.R. 20 focuses on tax credits and would require the legislature to review one-third of the tax credits every regular session, so there'd be a six-year cycle. And then the House bills mostly deal with federal exclusions. 2696 pertains to like-kind exchanges and would require taxpayers to include the gain when calculating Oregon taxable income. House Bill 2697 would require Oregon residents to include in Oregon taxable income a federal exclusion of income earned abroad. House Bill 2698 would require taxpayers to include contributions when calculating Oregon taxable income. These are contributions to employee stock ownership plans. Those are on behalf of the employer and the employee, so there's a two-sided effect of that tax expenditure. 2711 is kind of a companion to 2697. This one pertains to federal civilian employees who are allowed to exclude certain special allowances pertaining to cost of living. 2712 eliminates the corporate income tax credit for the amount of life insurance, fire insurance premiums paid. That is an Oregon credit. That's the one exception to the theme of federal exclusions. And House Bill 28 would require taxpayers to add to Oregon taxable income earned in foreign subsidiaries before it's repatriated. So that's kind of a topic sentence for each of the bills.
Great. Thank you. Representative Riley.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Riley, and I'm the state representative for Hillsborough, Corneas, and Forest Grove. Tax expenditures are an interesting thing and very complicated. I've been looking at them for quite some time now, and in the past have put in bills very similar to one of the bills that we're hearing today, which would have us look at tax expenditures every 6 years. I've put that in a couple of times and it's died before it got to the floor. So this time I decided to go a little bit differently. As I'm sure we all know, some tax expenditures are very good things. They do what they're intended to do. They do good policy. Some of them are not so good. Some of them started out as good and they're no longer good. They've outlived their usefulness. So with that in mind, I decided this time to, of the few tax expenditures that I've looked at very carefully, to choose a few to bring before the committee. And as I say, some tax expenditures are good and some are not so good. And as an example, I have in these bills that I dropped, there are two that are I find after further examination are much better than I thought they were. And so I'm going to ask...
A couple not so good.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Exactly right. So I'm going to ask House Bill 2696 and House Bill 2769 not be considered today. I think these are tax expenditures which still serve a good purpose, and we probably don't need to waste our time on those today.
I'm sorry, would you repeat those numbers?
Yeah, 2696 and 2769. That's the farm worker housing and in-kind exchanges.
That one we actually didn't open.
Oh, good. Okay, well, then forget
that. Yeah, you got to me last week on that one, if you'll recall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. It was on the agenda, so.
Right.
I want to talk just about one or two of these.
Just a moment. You're not interested in pursuing 2696.
That's correct.
Could you give us just a little bit of an explanation?
I could. And the reason I put it on here in the first place is since tax expenditures are a little difficult sometimes to understand, I misunderstood this one. And
we all suffer. That.
Yeah. So what I thought this did was re-establish a base at transfer. Much like the death reestablishes a base on some things.
What we call bumped up basis.
Correct.
Right.
I was mistaken. This does not reestablish a base. It retains the base, and so taxes are at some point paid if the property is disposed of and not exchanged.
Okay.
So,
members, are there any objection to closing the public hearing on House Bill 2696, given that what Representative Riley has indicated? I don't see any. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2696. Please go ahead on the others.
Okay. I'm not going to talk about all of them. I think the point is that we should be reviewing tax expenditures periodically, and Representative Greenlick's bill is very similar to what I would like to have done. But in the meantime, there are, as I say, a few, and I want to talk about one in particular, and that's the House Bill 2807, which exempts certain income from foreign corporations. This is a bill that was passed back in 1909 at federal government level, which at a time when we were trying to encourage our U.S. corporations to expand and to move overseas, move into foreign markets overseas and have a presence. I think that it's long since outlived its usefulness. We don't have a problem with that anymore. In fact, we have the opposite problem. We have too many jobs going overseas. And so to continue that particular credit is, in my opinion, counterproductive. So I'm going to stop. I'm not going to go over every bill, if that's all right with the chair. The point of bringing these was to show that there are tax expenditures which should be reviewed, which should be repealed. There are other tax expenditures which are actually good and should be continued. But all tax expenditures should be looked at periodically.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions at this time for Representative Riley? Representative Greenlick has been sitting very patiently waiting for his turn. Representative.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. HJR 14 is a good government.
And for the record.
I'm sorry. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33. I screwed up last night in my own committee, and I haven't learned yet. I'm very happy to be here this morning to talk about House Joint Resolution 14. Which is, I believe, a responsible government measure. We collect, I don't know, you know better than I do, $16 billion or so a biennium in general revenue and lottery income, I hope, this time. Something like that. And we very carefully figure out how to spend it. We have a ways and means process that's exquisitely complicated, but that looks at every single item in that budget in a very careful way. We don't collect $26 or $27 billion a biennium by excluding them as a revenue expenditure, and we don't look very carefully at that. Furthermore, it takes 31 votes to pass an appropriation bill to spend money, but it takes 36 votes in the House to stop spending money by giving it away as a tax expenditure. With 31 votes, we can add a revenue expenditure, and it takes 36 votes to take it away. That's just nonsense. I mean, here we are as a responsible legislature looking at every single dollar we spend in the Ways and Means process and completely ignoring how we spend $27 billion, twice that much money, as a revenue expenditure. What H.J.R. 14 simply does is it proposes a constitutional amendment that puts an automatic 10-year sunset on every revenue expenditure and causes us every legislative session to review 20% of them. The intention would be to have it cycled so that we have every 10 years we look at one-fifth of the revenue expenditures in the same careful way we look at our ways and means, we use our ways and means process. Now, many of them serve a wonderful purpose, and we all love them. We like the home mortgage deduction. On the other hand, most of us don't think a home mortgage deduction should be on our third home or our fourth home, or as a recent candidate for president had, maybe 17 homes. I expect if he were a resident of the state of Oregon, he would take off the property tax on all 17 homes as an income tax deduction. It just, frankly, that one doesn't make any sense. And should we be eliminating that? No, we should be reviewing it very carefully every 10 years or so and deciding whether it still meets the purpose for which it was designed. There are all sorts of things for any of you that have reviewed that revenue expenditures book, and I suspect you've all done it in a lot more care than I have. We're essentially driven by federal tax code decisions. And many of them simply, well, we know about federal tax code decisions. Many of them simply don't make any sense. So this is simply a plea for responsible government. It's a plea to get us in a situation where the Revenue Committee can be looking carefully at these systematically and on an ongoing basis and decide which of them we want to maintain and which of them we don't. That simple. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is this resolution ready, in your view? Can it be sent out to the people in the court mission today?
Today, along with H.J.R. 18, which we haven't gotten to yet.
And
I'm sorry, that's not about this committee.
I'm sorry, which one is H.J.R.
18? H.J.R. 18 is the Hope Amendment to put the right to health care in the Oregon Constitution.
Right. Different issue.
But they can both go out together.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Representative Greenlee? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
How are you today?
Very well.
Colleagues, I'm here to speak on HDR 20, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. I always forget that.
Thank you.
You've read this proposal, this HDR 20, and what this is for. Those of you that were on this committee last year or last session, it's kind of deja vu because it's the same basis draft that I had drafted that bill last time. What this bill does, it authorizes and makes it mandatory for the legislative body to review all tax credits in the state of Oregon 33% each 2 years for the maximum of a six-year period. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to take away those tax credits or that we're going to reauthorize them, but at least we have the opportunity to have people come in, say their piece, tell us how many jobs they're creating, tell us where this money is coming, whether it's coming in the state of Oregon or whether it's going outside the state of Oregon. But it gives you and me the opportunity to have a handle on all credits that have been issued in the state of Oregon instead of having an ongoing credit system. You'll see in the bill itself that after a six-year period, it basically sunsets every tax credit until we reauthorize it. So I think it's a good, sound fiscal policy, and I think it's a policy that this body needs to embark upon, is a checks and balance, because what was good 50 years ago may not be applicable or good today. But we do have credits on the books that are not only outlived their usefulness, but are not an advantage to the state of Oregon at this point. So that's about all I have to say. Do you have any questions of me? I'd be glad to answer them.
Yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If this sounds familiar...
Well, I think you co-sponsored it with me last time.
Well, Representative Esquivel and I have been working together on this for quite some time, and he decided to go back to the same approach again, and I decided to try something different. But I absolutely support what Representative Esquivel is suggesting.
Okay. Other questions for Representative Esquivel? It's interesting how these ideas move around over time.
Well, it's interesting that it's if you stay in the building long enough, it's just like Groundhog Day. Same issues just
right.
Keep coming up. I'll throw an example of what about fluoridation of water? How many times have we seen that?
Well, but that one continues not to be the law, and we hope that some of these do get to become the law sooner rather than later. It is interesting to note that on this particular legislation, it used to be sponsored primarily by Democrats, and now it's sponsored entirely by Republicans. I don't know whether that's progress or not, but I suspect it is.
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, actually, that was my doings because I didn't get an opportunity to get around to get to my other colleagues across the aisle, but I would definitely have done so because I know they would have signed on to it.
So you think there may be a Democrat or two who supports this?
I think there's going to be more than one or two, maybe even four, five, or ten.
Thank you very much. Anything else for Representative Esquivel? We know you're in another committee. We appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. On those two that we've been talking about, we have Alice Bartlett, who would like to be heard. Alice?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm once again here representing AUW of Oregon, and we support both of these.
And for the record, would you state your name?
Oh, I'm sorry, Alice Bartelt, and I'm from Portland. We don't really have a position as to whether we like HJR 14 or HJR 20 better. What we do like is having a review of all of the tax expenditures periodically. We're going to have probably about a $4 billion deficit in the coming biennium, and we feel that the tax expenditures...
So you're an optimist.
Well...
You think it's only going to be $4
billion? I don't know.
Yeah.
Just from what I hear...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But our basic support is for a review of all these tax expenditures to see if we can't pull out some money to help fill that gap.
Questions for Ms. Bartel? I have a couple, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I noticed that 14, and I probably should have asked this of the representatives, 14 is on all tax expenditures, and 20 is only on the tax credits. I wonder if you know if your organization is interested in sunsetting all the tax expenditures, which would include deductions and other things in addition to credit.
Right. I don't think that there's anything that shouldn't be reviewed in the tax expenditures. So I know that one of them only looks at credits, but I think that everything should be looked at.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Just to be orderly, is there anyone else who would like to be heard on HJR 14 or HJR 20? Right now. Yes. Please come forward. Jody.
For the record, Jody Weiser of Tax Fairness Oregon. We definitely prefer HJR 14 because of the extensiveness in which This bill looks at all the different ways we spend money, not just the tax credits. And there hasn't been a year in my experience where there's been so many different bills on both sides of the house, of the building, and from both parties that show interest in looking at tax expenditures. There's, you know, ideas to evaluate the tax expenditure book itself in a different way. There's bills to say, let's look at these on various kinds of schedules. There's bills to refer it to the voter. My suggestion would be that you form a working group. That working group worked with all of those bills, and you try to figure out a way to pass something internally that says, okay, this is the schedule upon which we're going to take seriously our responsibility about these tax expenditures. And then that same committee line up the plan for if you can't do it internally, you send it to the voters. But it seems really simple to say, yeah, this is what we're going to do and start doing it. And instead, I think we have about 11 tax expenditures expiring this year that there's not a group of people who have sat down and looked at and said, are these tax expenditures we want to include, continue, or are they ones for us to let go of? So it's kind of a matter of saying we're going to take responsibility and do this thing. And it's probably a job that needs to be done between sessions, generally speaking. Because I think doing a thorough review of these tax expenditures is going to take good time. You're going to want to hear everybody's viewpoint. Some of them are very old. But the interest is so high, it's silly to say, let's make this decision sometime in the future. Instead, I would suggest a working group, and you make the decisions now. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Robert.
Mr. Chair, if that's something that you would like to do, I'd certainly like to volunteer for that.
Thank you. Now, of course, 14 or 20 would have to be referred because they're constitutional amendments. Do you have an opinion about those? The current rule, as we understand it, although it's not been litigated and we're not certain that it's the rule, is that for tax expenditures to be repealed that don't have sunsets, they have to be passed by a three-fifths vote in both houses of the legislature and signed by the governor under the raising revenue rubric. Now, we're not certain that's the rule, because it's never been litigated, but that is appears to be what our legislative council believes to be the rule. I think that's properly stated. These amendments, either one of them, would change that and essentially require that the tax expenditures in 14 and tax credits in 20 would be automatically repealed unless they were renewed by the legislature by a majority vote. So that changes the procedure. Do you have any opinion about that issue?
Well, I think what I was suggesting is that you might be able to get the 36 votes right here in this building that says we're going to put an end date on every tax expenditure.
Yes.
On our own. We don't need to be told by the public that's what we want, and we have the votes to do that, and then you do put an end date on all of them, and that requires you then to review them. But you also need a process for orderly review of them, and I think that's something you can do, should be able to do internally as well.
Thank you.
If you can't get to 36, then you'd have to do a referral, I would think.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are your thoughts on the scope of this effort when it comes to certain of these things drive a certain purpose or advance a certain thing, and others simply raise revenue? And that raising of revenue concept would seem to be driven by the need for the state to have revenue, and that would be a ways and means discussion. Thus, if we form this work group every couple of years, it seems like it would focus nicely on the purpose element, but the revenue raising element is going to vary every once in a while,
right.
Like this year, for example.
Yeah.
So my question is, how much time should we spend? Because I can see this becoming an awful lot of work, and I just wonder if we can't allocate our time more in a more refined manner. So I'd like your thoughts on the one bill is very, very broad, the other is much more narrow. Mm-hmm. So I've thrown a lot of issues there, but why don't you address whichever ones you like?
Well, there's a lot of things in the expenditures that are our compliance, for instance, with federal law. I'm prepared to talk about two of those today. And they're very old federal law that it's hard for me to figure out how we would support. And they would raise revenue, but I think the basic unfairness in the tax system is also at issue with those laws. And so, yes, any time you end a tax expenditure, you will raise revenue. But that wouldn't necessarily be the focus of what you're doing. And we do annually review the budgets for all departments. I don't know how thoroughly we questioned, you know, is what's done by the Department of Forestry really critical to as a service of the state or the Department of Corrections? And there's a lot of stuff that just kind of keeps moving along pretty much the way it is. And that's, in some ways, that's what's happened with tax expenditures. But I think that we really should ask ourselves, are these the priorities of our day, instead of just having the automatics that we have in our tax codes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jody, one of the thoughts that I've had is that we spend a lot of time looking at how we spend our money once we've brought it in. We don't spend a lot of time looking at how we spend our money before we bring it in, because we're really spending tax money before we get it, is what a tax expenditure is, why it's called an expenditure. And what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I don't spend much time at all Ways and Means. I spent most of my time here, but a lot of the things we're doing here are looking at ways of adding tax expenditures. And it seems to me that right now our culture is doing a shift where we're shifting from saying that's deductible to saying that's a tax credit. I mean, I remember sitting in this room the first time I saw a bill go through where we made being a volunteer a tax credit. And I thought, oh, man, that's going to get expanded. This is going to be, you know, first there's one good cause for which you get a tax credit for being a volunteer. And pretty soon, most of us will have to have a tax credit in order to be volunteers. There's a shift that doesn't make particularly good sense, I don't think. But it's we do. There's a huge number of tax expenditure bills in the docket this year. I don't know how many of them that will be heard. But there certainly are lots of concepts out there to add to our tax expenditures, and we will look at those as they come before this committee. But under the current plan, we don't necessarily look at them again for a long time or ever, because they may or may not have a sunset date on them.
They will if they come through this committee, because we have a general agreement that we're not going to pass any more tax credits that don't have sunset dates on them. And if we don't, it's because we made an error, not because we intended it that way. And for precisely the reasons that you're describing, that we need them. Is there anything else for Ms. Weiser? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony this morning. I'm going to move on to a different bill, and I have three people signed up to be heard on House Bill 2712. Which is, you'll recall, has to do with the income tax credit for gross premium paid on insurers on fire insurance policies. So we'll hear from Steve Patterson, Brian Miller, and John Powell. And while they're coming up, is there anyone else this today who would like to be heard on 2712? Okay, thank you. Gentlemen, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve Patterson with Oregon Mutual Insurance Company from McMinnville, Oregon. Here to testify in opposition to HB 2712. Oregon Mutual Insurance Company has been in McMinnville since 1894, 115 years starting this year. Very proud to be an Oregon citizen and to pay living wages to Oregonians. I'm here in opposition to this. Last session, I was here to testify in this committee in favor of Senate Bill 179, which dealt with the excise tax. And I testified in favor of it in spite of the fact that it raised Oregon Mutual's tax about 7%. And the reason was equity, that foreign and domestic insurance companies were treated differently under that bill. And I think this committee and the legislature did a good job of evening the playing field. There's inequity in House Bill 2712 as well in its application, which is why I'm here today in opposition. There are several reasons I would oppose it, but primarily because the losing the tax credit on this bill for a domestic company means we're going to pay the full amount of whatever credit we get on the bill into the general revenue fund. If you're a foreign insurance company, you're going to drop that credit down and take it off your retaliatory tax, which means we're going to reduce the amount of their increase as compared to domestic insurance companies. That inequity, once again, unlevels the playing field, and I don't think raises the kind of money that the bill initially intends to raise. There are reasons I would oppose it just on the general grounds that it's a tax increase at a time that our business doesn't need it. But primarily that inequity is the reason I am here in opposition. I've attached a chart to my testimony, which is a very simple, our accounting department did it. You'll see at the head of it, foreign insurer and domestic insurer. And this assumes that both of these companies had $1.25 million in written premium in the different lines that are taxed by the fire marshal tax. It shows for the domestic insurer that the Oregon excise tax being paid, that credit is removed, and what the benefit to Oregon, the extra tax would be, and then total tax at the bottom. For the foreign insurer, you see that that would drop down against the retaliatory tax and be given as a credit, which would end up with the foreign insurer paying actually less. And the net effect of this is to, it would basically remove part of the retaliatory tax on foreign insurers, which is imposed because of the way they would insure or they would tax an Oregon company doing business in their state. I'm certainly available for any questions.
Thank you. Gentlemen, please.
Chair Barnhart and members of the House Revenue Committee, my name is Brian Miller, here today on behalf of Farmers Insurance Group and Farmers Insurance Company of Oregon. Rather than rehash the comments you just heard from Mr. Patterson, I'll simply add kind of farmer's perspective on this. It appears, at least on initial analysis, this bill really only affects about a half dozen insurance companies, and those are companies that are either domiciled, headquartered in Oregon, like Oregon Mutual, or have some significant presence in Oregon, like Farmers Insurance Group. And our decision to cite a customer service facility in Hillsborough, actually in Representative Edwards' district, unfortunately not Representative Riley's, was due in part, or at least part of the calculus for the decision-making process, was the current tax structure that currently applies to insurance companies here in Oregon. In our experience, sir, currently that's about 550 employees that are working in that facility, and we expect or hope to grow that to close to 750 here in the next couple of years. And that facility is servicing Oregon policyholders and our agents here in the state, as well as in five additional states. So I just want to reiterate, I guess, the importance of this particular tax credit to Farmers Insurance Group. There's three of these facilities nationwide. Could have very easily been located in Pocatillo, Idaho, or Simi Valley, California, two of the other places where we previously have presence, but the decision was made to place it here in Oregon in part because of the current tax structure. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Powell. Before you, representing Liberty Northwest, and as some of you know, I represent other insurers as well who are so-called foreign insurers. They're only foreign by statutory definition. You're very familiar with their names. For the reasons Mr. Patterson explained and the fairness and equity issue, Liberty Northwest would also oppose this bill, but I want to put this tax in context. Insurance companies pay a tremendous amount of tax to the state of Oregon. I think we're third in the line behind the income tax and corporate excise tax. So the insurance industry is a very large contributor to the income stream in the state of Oregon. This particular tax and the credit goes to a very worthwhile cause. That's the Office of the Fire Marshal. All citizens in the state of Oregon benefit from the work of that agency. 56% of its budget comes from this particular tax. There is a nexus with insurance, and that's why the system, I believe in 1967, was set up, where the industry, in essence, loans the money for the agency to run and then recoups in the form of this tax credit. We think that system has merit and should be continued. The insurance industry gets some benefit in terms of the work on arson and those kinds of agency work that agency performs. They do far more than that. They train and have what we consider a first-class operation in Oregon. So we would hope that this tax credit continues, particularly in this economy, as insurers are facing some of the same challenges that other businesses are. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming and talking to us about this. This is exactly the reason I believe that we should be reviewing all tax expenditures on a rotating basis. This is a very complicated issue, tax expenditures, and to try to understand all the nuances of it are just impossible. And the only way that we as legislators, especially on this committee, will be able to understand why, you know, old tax credits are there, what happened, why are they there. The only way we'll ever be able to understand all that is if we have people come and say, here's what happened, here's what they do. I think this has been very, very worthwhile. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Riley, on behalf of the Capital Club, we appreciate it too. More business.
Yes. Yes.
Somebody's got to do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other questions for this panel?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Yeah.
While we're on 2712, is there anyone else who would like to be heard on that one today? I don't see anyone.
Chair,
yes.
I didn't realize I had my own stimulus package.
We do what we can,
yes.
Representative Riley. We do what we can. There's one witness who wants to be heard on three different bills, so we'll ask Jim Craven to come forward, and also Marion Hayes, who wants to be heard on 2807. So Jim, we'll take you first, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Craven, on behalf of Tech America, the nation's largest high technology trade association.
Yes.
And it's always a pleasure to be here at 8 o'clock and here in Room A.
We appreciate your attendance.
We all have cheat sheets with us today. We have so many bills before us, it's hard to keep the numbers straight. A couple general comments real quick about the previous conversation. I'm not positive you need a constitutional amendment to order yourselves to take a look at tax expenditures. You could do it by statute. You could do it tomorrow. You could do it every day for the rest of the session and get through part of the book. I do want to be aware of the workload on your valuable staff of such a mandate, to especially to look at all tax expenditures in that big, thick book. If you were to do that with the Representative Riley has his well annotated. You'll have to share the color code with me later. So I do have some concerns about that. I think you could do it tomorrow. You could start this afternoon, and you could look at tax expenditures and ask people to come up and give you input. I'm not positive why there's a need for a constitutional amendment to require you to do a job that you're constitutionally allowed to do at any given time. So that's a general comment. We do have a tax expenditure report process, and we did have some conversations several weeks ago about how that process could be improved, streamlined, focused, whatever, and that's probably an appropriate conversation to have. I'm not sure we need a constitutional amendment to have that conversation. On the specifics of the two measures, again, I think this conversation about we're giving away our money, the voters of Oregon decided that it should be harder for you to raise taxes then it should be for you to spend money. Whether you agree with that or not, that was, I believe, something that the voters asked to be put into law to require a 36-vote majority in the House.
Actually, that was referred by the legislature.
And the voters approved it.
And the voters approved it, correct.
Right. So I think there is a difference if you move forward in this analysis of looking at Oregon tax credits, which are things this body has specifically authorized and approved that do have revenue impacts. And I think sunsets are appropriate for Oregon tax credits. I think if you get into the everything, as you recall, in that big, thick book, the majority of that is federal conformity. If you want to get into putting sunsets on every item of federal conformity to the tax code, I think you're asking for an enormous job and a task that may preclude you from doing anything else during session in this room except working your way through that book.
It would certainly require a different organization for this committee. It would certainly look, it would probably look a lot more like the Ways and Means Committee with a bunch of subcommittees in order to handle those other tasks. That's occurred to me as we've been talking this morning.
I agree, Mr. Chair. And I do believe that it is legitimate to push back a little bit on this thesis that tax legislation is the same as Ways and Means. I understand people of good faith can have differences of opinion on that subject, but I believe that the other way to spin that theory is to say that tax expenditures allow taxpayers to retain their money as much as saying that a tax expenditure is the same as a direct appropriation. But I recognize that there are differences of opinion on that thesis, but there are differences. Not everyone agrees that the two are the same, and many people agree that perhaps there should be a higher bar to asking people to give up more of their tax dollars than there is for you to balance the budget and spend appropriately in the Ways and Means process. But moving on to the bills before you today, I signed up on three of them, House Bill 2697, House Bill 2698, and House Bill 2807. I think these are all federal conformity issues. These are not Oregon tax breaks or tax credits. These are simply items in that big, thick book that result by us generally being connected to the federal tax code. I think these three specific issues, I would differ with the sponsor, Representative Riley. I think you have one, 2697, which is conformity to a federal code that allows Oregonians who are working abroad to exclude a portion of their income from federal taxation in recognition of the additional costs of working abroad and the fact that taxpayers often pay taxes in their foreign countries. So again, this is would be a sharp stick in the eye of all of our good traded sector company employees who are working abroad and would deny them the value of the federal exclusion. House Bill 2698 is sort of interesting because it would represent a tax increase on both companies and individuals who offer employee stock ownership programs. I'm not really sure why we'd want to discourage that or whether we want to raise the cost of to employers and their employees who participate in such programs. And House Bill 2807, I agree with Representative Riley, is an older provision of the federal tax code, controlled foreign corporations. It's been the subject of incredible amount of conversation at the federal level. Some of you who lived through the 03 and 05 session where Congress and foreign countries, particularly the EU, were negotiating over how to deal with certain of these credits. But again, it is a federal code issue that is of value to Oregon's traded sector companies who are engaged in the global economy. So I think all three of these bills represent perhaps the downside of a selective, somewhat, I would argue, random approach to the tax expenditure book, picking items off out of the book, putting them on a sheet, assigning them a dollar value where they take on a life of their own, and it's like, wow, we could spend that money on this program we care about. We have testified for many years against that approach of sort of
picking things out of the book, looking at the dollar amounts, and trying to throw them into budget balance. So we would oppose these three specific bills, and we would continue to advocate, as we will, for federal connection, notwithstanding the action that this body took a couple weeks ago. We still believe in that policy, and we'll continue to express our favoritism for it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Crave? Yes, Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim, thank you for your comments, or Mr. Craven, I guess, a little bit more formal. I just wanted to point out a slight inconsistency in your earlier comments, because I think it's important for the record that we have it. You said that what the voters had done is made it so we only needed 31 votes to spend money, and so you analogized the expenditures to the spending of money, and then you went on to say that it's not like spending money, and we wouldn't want this to be like the Ways and Means process. And I think that those two things are at odds with each other. And I think that either way you look at this process, House Joint HJR 14 or 20, I think, gets us to a better conclusion, which is it potentially lowers the bar for how we address these things with regards to the number of votes that are necessary, and or makes this potentially look more like the Ways and Means process. And I'm only in my first session here. I'm very new to this thing, but sitting on revenue and sitting on the Ways and Means Public Safety Subcommittee, I'm watching this process from two different sides. I'm watching this in a budget crisis and watching the ledger from two different sides. And I think that there might be a bit of wisdom to having people, corporations who are receiving an enormous public benefit, have to come in here and defend that public benefit, much the same way we force our public institutions to come in here to defend their budget. So those are my comments. I'd love to hear your response.
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, those of us who worked on particularly Oregon tax credits, which are, you know, direct benefits that this body grants uniquely to the Oregon tax code, as opposed to the federal conformity debate. I've been in this committee for 20 years, and I have come before it many times to defend issues that I care about. The issues that we have worked on all have had sunsets. We've been back every 4 or 6 years and made our case. I don't have any problem with that basic scenario that says people ought to be able to come in here and make their case. We have done it successfully, and we'll continue to do so. My other comment, looking at the Oregon tax expenditure book and saying that corporations ought to come in here and defend what's in the book, I just remind you, as I've done many times before, that on the income tax part of that book, 93% of the total dollar value goes to your constituents, not to corporations. Corporations are a small, single-digit portion of the big discussion of tax expenditures. It's not my theory. It's spelled out in page 6 or 7 of the book. So you know, the point is, we should, if you want to go down that road, you can have individuals come in here and explain to you why they like the personal exemption credit, why they like the home mortgage exemption, why number one on the list this year is employer-paid medical expenses. Those are called a tax expenditure in the methodology of the book, and I think they've risen to number one on the hit parade. If you want to have a discussion about whether or not you want to tax the value of the employer-paid health, you know, let's have it. But, you know, the point is, the bulk of the whole tax expenditure debate is about tax expenditures to individuals. It's not about tax expenditures for corporations. Yes, they exist, and yes, there's a dollar value to them, but 93% of the value of that book goes to individual Oregon taxpayers. And you can talk about means testing, you know, there's lots of things you could talk about, income thresholds, all that, but it is really a debate about things that most of the value is just federal conformity for individual taxpayers and things that you have granted to your constituents. So, amen, and that's the end of my comment.
Thank you, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim and I have had this conversation a few times, and he has good points. Most of these dollar amounts are individual. Many are federal conformity issues. There are two things that I want to say about all that. Number one, I think we should stop talking about dollar value, mm-hmm. because this is not, for me, it's not about dollar value. It's about fairness. It's about looking at making sure that what used to work still works, and that we're getting good value for the dollars that we're allowing you to keep. Okay? And the second point is that federal conformity simply means that we believe Congress knows better than we do. And I don't believe that that's necessarily the case for Oregon.
Thank you. I don't think that requires a comment unless you want to make one.
It could, Mr. Chair, but I think I'll take a pass.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that.
Representative Call.
And just to clarify my comments, I said corporations because when you spoke, you were speaking about corporate interests. Yesterday we had folks in here advocating for the increase in the earned income tax credit. I found that discussion equally as illuminating, and the people who came here to defend that increase compelling in their arguments, and to the extent that we would continue to address all of our tax credits and look at our social policies in that regard, I think that this process would be better for it, and people would be more greatly benefited because of it. So I didn't mean to single it out. I was specifically addressing the comments that you made, and when I didn't realize you're in here advocating for, you know, tax credits to the poor, the non-corporate, but to the extent that you are, I appreciate that as well, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else for Mr. Craven? Thank you. Marion Haynes.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. My name is Marion Haynes. I'm with the Oregon Business Association. I signed up on one bill, but would like to just speak broadly to those that are disconnecting from the federal code. We recognize that we're in a very difficult revenue situation here at the state. We also believe that all of the decisions that we make now need to be made with an eye toward repowering the economy and job creation. We do have a number of concerns about these bills that would disconnect from the federal code that could actually make an economic recovery more difficult because of their impact on businesses, particularly those traded sector businesses that are the foundation of our economy. Would like to share Jim's we do share Jim's thought that we need to be looking at this in a holistic way rather than what feels like kind of a piecemeal approach. And to that end, OBA has put together an economic crisis task force where we're going to be looking at the whole picture and hopefully coming back to you for some recommendations, looking at both cut side but also revenue side and what we think that ought to look like. So, again, having that broader conversation with an eye focused very much on the economy and what we need to do to ensure the quickest recovery we can, and having that conversation in the context of the whole picture is what we look forward to doing with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm interested in your economic crisis task force. When does it meet and who's on it?
It is meeting next week, and it's a number of members of our executive committee. So we're going to be looking at, again, the full picture and revenue that we know is an issue here, also on the cut side, and really try to do that and paying attention to, you know, things like this that could impact the economic recovery. So I think in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we're hoping to have something to share.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I absolutely agree with what you just said. I think we should be looking at it in a more holistic way and looking at everything instead of looking piecemeal. I tried that twice and didn't get many people here to talk about it. This time I got a lot of people here to talk about it. And I think that it worked. And I think that what we can do is we can move forward and hopefully come up with some really good solution.
Thank you. And I appreciate, I think that certainly I personally, and I hope the committee appreciates the Oregon Business Association wants to do to help us to understand both what's happening in the economy and what we might be able to do about it and about the public services we're trying to protect. So I'm personally anxiously awaiting what you have to say to us in 3 or 4 weeks. I appreciate it very much. Anything else for this panel? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else who wants to be heard this morning on these bills? Yeah, Ralph, yes. And Jody, please come forward.
Mr. Chair, I won't take much time up. Ralph Groner would ask me. 2712 is my interest. Just for history's sake, in the last recession, the amount of money that funded our fire investigators and prevention was gone. I forget the name of the fund. About 25 people brought together, frankly, by myself, including John Powell, and the fire industry in Oregon, most fire chiefs, because we had a crisis that caused this to be funded the way it was. Just for history, because I don't believe any of you at that time were involved with this issue. And so I just want you to know that the money from this fund is a little bit deeper than was commented by John, in that this now funds not only the investigators of the fire marshal, which handle rural Oregon. You have your own investigators in the city of Salem, Eugene, Portland, but our rural parts of the state depend on the fire investigators and prevention program as paid for by this. I also have my state police arson squad, which, again, these are our members, is funded by this fund. And third, 18 of our Board of Police Standards and Training, which train all firefighters in the state for accreditation, including volunteer fire departments, is funded by this fund. Again, this was raided once because of a misunderstanding. I won't say which legislator did that, because that particular legislator is no longer the chair of Ways and Means. The fact was that bothered the entire industry as much as this bill bothers all of us, in that we spent so many hours working out a solution to make sure that we had fire safety, fire investigation, and training. So that's what that fund delivers to Oregon, and I appreciate you allowing me this opportunity to expand a little bit. Thank you.
And you're referring, I think, to House Bill 2712.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Any questions for Ralph? Thank you very much. Jody?
I do think that we have to look at these.
For the record.
For the record, Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness, Oregon. I think we do have to look piecemeal at pieces of the code. I don't think that there's a globalistic way to decide whether we want to disconnect on any one particular piece of the federal code. And I'd like to speak to two of the bills that Representative Riley brought to you, because there are two that I can't see the public purpose behind. The first is House Bill 2697, which allows one to exclude up to $85,000 of income from taxation if it's earned above following specific rules about how many months you have to be out of the country, and you can't be out more than so many months. It's pretty specific legislation. But we're following federal code that was enacted in 1926. And I think the world has changed dramatically since a time when most people crossed the ocean in ships to work abroad. And the people who worked abroad was really limited. Now we kind of hope our children will go abroad to have that broadening experience. It's a different world we're in. And I think that it does help traded sector businesses, but I'm not sure that this is a way that makes any particular sense for us to be helping traded sector businesses. And it doesn't only help them. I, in fact, was advantaged by this law when I was a Fulbright teacher in England. I paid no income tax in either country, despite the fact that both countries have an income tax. So that year it saved me about $6,000. It would be easy to be in variance from the federal code on this, just as it is any time we pass any tax credit. We end up with another line on the form or another item that could go in on one of the general lines where you might have several different tax expenditures on that line. And it's unclear why the taxpayers should help support somebody who is abroad. Because certainly the years that I was abroad, I used the services of this country probably more than any other time in my life, except when I was at a publicly supported university. That I was dependent on my resources at home being protected. I wanted to come home to a country that was safe and secure and the laws of the land were still in place. I wanted the military force there for me. I wanted the school kids that I left behind to still be being educated. And I wasn't here to protect my assets. I was elsewhere. And while I was there, I was using the benefits of the country's placements abroad. I was using the consulate services there. So I was actually double dipping in my use of government resources and paying nothing for them. And it made no sense to me, but of course because it was there and it was part of how it was even advertised in the program, I did it. I think that if our traded sector companies need to pay employees more because they're working abroad, then that's between those companies and their employees. It's not something that all the taxpayers of the state have any particular reason to participate in. The other piece of very old federal connection law that I'd like to speak to is the 1031 property, the exemption from paying taxes on capital gains when you change property, like-kind exchanges.
We did close the hearing on that bill. We're not considering that bill any longer today.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But
that I won't
you may want to meet to talk to members of the committee privately on that matter. But that's not germane to our current discussion.
Okay, fine. I'm sorry. I got here late.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any questions for Jody on the first point she made? It's always useful to hear from you because you are so articulate in stating the other point of view. In fact, many people benefit from public services without even realizing that they're benefiting because they're part of the ocean we swim in. We don't notice them because they're just there. But in fact, some taxpayer has to pay for them in order for us to receive them. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on any of these items that we have open? I don't see anyone. With that, we'll close the public hearings, and the committee is adjourned.